Welcome to A Cult of Personality at acultofpersonality.net. Thank you for listening.
Welcome to A Cult of Personality, esoteric podcast extraordinaire. Peering behind the veil to provide you with recorded interviews with esoteric teachers and scholars from all over the world. You can find us online at occultofpersonality.net, which features an extensive archive of recordings. Just click the available shows link on the website. I'm your host, Greg Kaminsky. Welcome back. This is podcast episode number 128. Featuring an interview with Peregrine Wildoak, author of By Names and Images, Bringing the Golden Dawn to Life, as well as the excellent blog Magic of the Ordinary. The Cult of Personality podcast is made possible by you, the listeners, and the subscribers to the Cult of Personality membership section. Your support allows for the continuation of free recorded podcasts and the publicly available archive. If you're not already a subscriber to the membership section, please take a moment to click the link on the sidebar of the occultofpersonality.net website or browse to occultofpersonality.net/membership and peruse the amount and quality of the available content. Access to everything costs only $7.95 per month, and there's no obligation. It's a great way to support independent media. 3, 6, and 12-month prepaid subscriptions are now an option as well, making subscribing to the membership section even more convenient. You can also support the show and sponsor an episode by donating via the PayPal donate button on the website, as Steve M. did in order to sponsor this episode. Thanks again, Steve. Your generous and dedicated support for this podcast has been exemplary, and we all owe a debt of gratitude for it. Now, in episode number 128, we're joined by Peregrine Wildoak, author of By Names and Images, Bringing the Golden Dawn to Life, published by Skylight Press. Peregrine also writes the excellent and insightful blog called Magic of the Ordinary, located at magicoftheordinary.wordpress.com. The primary focus of this interview is Peregrine's book, By Names and Images, which is one of the most important Golden Dawn books I've read to date. While other authors are adept at describing many facets of the system, Peregrine has analyzed it from the inner perspective. Because of that, By Names and Images is a truly invaluable book, not only for solo practitioners who want to work within the Golden Dawn system and members of lodges, but also for those who have an interest in ceremonial magic more generally. By Names and Images has been praised by luminaries of the tradition as a must-have, an instant classic, and that it provides the reader with an account of the experience of working the system as opposed to a rehash of Rigardi's book. I highly recommend Peregrine Wildoak's By Names and Images, Bringing the Golden Dawn to Life, and I know that you'll enjoy this interview with him. Peregrine Wildoak, I want to welcome you to A Cult of Personality podcast. It is a pleasure to speak with you.
Lovely to speak with you, Greg. Thank you for making the time for this to happen.
And thank you as well. I very much appreciate it. Tonight we're going to be speaking about your book, By Names and Images, available from Skylight Press. Mm. And I'm sorry, the subtitle is Bringing the Golden Dawn to Life, for those who aren't clued in by the title itself.
Yes, it needed the subtitle, really. Golden Dawn, people will recognize the line By Names and Images. It's a very important line from the initial initiation ceremony. But the subtitle does give the intention of the book, which is really to allow people to engage with the Golden Dawn tradition as deeply as possible, to change their lives and to help serve the world as deeply as possible. That's the idea, to bring it more to life in one sense.
That's obviously an honorable intention, and I think your book accomplishes that, and we'll have to see, I guess, the effects on readers who work with it, but given them quite a bit to work with, I would say, and it's rather impressive.
Yeah, Gareth Knight, who's a part of the publishing team at Skylight Press, actually said something very similar to you in a review. He said, basically, it's there, but we'll wait and see the effects it has on the Golden Dawn community, whether they take it and run with it or it'll just sit as a book. So, yeah, I'm waiting to see that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And for people who don't know your work or aren't familiar with you, could you give us a brief bio and background on yourself?
Well, this is my first book, but I've been involved in the magical and Golden Dawn communities and traditions since I was a teenager, a late teenager. I discovered the word Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn in a science fiction book by Robert Anton Wilson and Robert Shea, which some of your listeners might be familiar with, the Illuminatus trilogy. And the words just set me on fire. And the next day I went down to the library, looked up the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, and from then on I was enraptured, and within a week I'd luckily come across a training school for the tradition. It was a very dodgy training school, but it got me in, got me thinking, and I became involved in the tradition quite early on. And throughout the years I've been studying, deepening, I've had some wonderful teachers, and also been initiated into other traditions such as Wicca and the Cunning Craft and Tibetan Vajrayana Buddhism. And, you know, I've done bits and pieces in my hometown in Perth, some public workshops. I've written for Australian magazines, Australian pagan magazines, been a representative for the pagan community in the 90s. But my main love has always been the Golden Dawn. Mm-hmm. As an effective change agent, shall we say. Robert Thurman, who writes about Tibetan Buddhism, talks about Tibetan Buddhism as being a enlightenment engine. He talks about the techniques being a method for bringing about the state of enlightenment. I don't quite see the Golden Dawn as that, but I do see the technology within it as some of the most advanced, but at the same time subtle, forms of spiritual technology the West has developed. And I really wanted to, in the book and in my teachings, I want to express that rather than people looking at the outer surface of the Golden Dawn, which is really what a lot of people just see in the books by Rigade, which some of your listeners may be familiar with. They see the rituals, but they don't see how the rituals work.
Right. And I think you've really tried to elucidate that in your book quite a bit. In terms of writing this, did you come up on situations where you were describing either a ceremony or the symbolism underlying it, where you were challenging an oath that you may have taken in disclosing any of this information?
I have been extremely fortunate, Greg, in that I've been initiated into two Golden Dawn orders, and in both of those orders they closed very quickly after my initiation, so I received very little information from them. And then my main teacher was a older gentleman from England who I met at a Theosophical Society bookstore, and he's taught me a lot of this material without putting me to any oath. He was from an old English order. He had retired out here to meet his family, who had emigrated out here. So I wasn't actually put to an oath. So I was very fortunate. If I was to write about the initiation ceremonies, I have oaths about the initiation ceremonies. So I can't really write about them, but the actual rituals that people practice on a daily basis, I was free to write about them. Very, very fortunate.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're all fortunate for that, by extension. Mm. Now, I'm curious because your book does contain a significant number of these rituals that come out of this Golden Dawn tradition, and between your book, Rigardi's book, and I think I'm safe in saying Pat Zalewski's books, it seems to me that a tremendous amount of material that was formerly sub rosa is now in the public domain. Mm. How do you believe this affects or doesn't affect the overall egregore, if you will, of the tradition in terms of the, I don't know if power is the right word or the punch that it packs, but it's obviously no longer hermetically sealed within the tradition, and I'm just curious about your thoughts on that.
Yes. If I'm answering your question correctly, if not, please restate it. Rigardi released in 1937 to 1945 the rituals, the bare bones of the rituals. Do this, say this, wave your arm in this way. This is what you do. And that was the mainstay for people getting hold of the Golden Dawn tradition since the 1940s or 1950s when the older lodges started to close. Now, Pat Zalewski, he's done a lot of wonderful work, and they've concentrated more on the initiation ceremonies where he looks at the symbolism, the inner work, the god forms that are required to raise the initiation ceremonies into a magical event rather than a dramatic or Masonic event. So he's put a lot of information out on that. I'm hoping By Names and Images has done the equivalent for the practices that the individual does, the pentagram rituals, the meditations, the middle pillar, and the other rituals. So hopefully that's changing in terms of how people approach the Golden Dawn. Now, to be honest, the Golden Dawn really hasn't been approached, I feel, very well for most people who've practiced it since Rigardi first released his book of ceremonies. I believe the Golden Dawn, like many traditions, is so rich that someone could actually take a ritual without doing much of the inner work and just do it, and they will get some effect because there's so much love and gift of power to transformers, potency, spiritual potency within the ceremonies, that they can do it and get some effect. What I'm hoping with the work from By Names and Images is that that will now change and people can do the inner work and get the full transforming of power. The same as what Pat Zalewski was doing and is still doing, releasing the information on the initiation ceremonies. So people can do these initiation ceremonies and not get some effect, but get the full effect that the magic intends us to have. So does that answer the question? In terms of egregore, I think that does, and I think that will affect this slowly. Nick Farrell reviewed the book, my book, By Names and Images, and he said it's a harbinger of what the Golden Dawn will become. Mm. It's not exactly there yet. A lot of people are still practicing the Golden Dawn on the outer, and it receives very valid criticism from other magical practitioners because of this. But I'm hoping Nick's right. his work, my work, Pat's work, lots of other people will change the way people look at the Golden Dawn and the way they actually practice it. He also said in that review, Nick also said, the Golden Dawn in recent years has become a bit of a joke in the land of its birth, meaning England. And it has, I mean, because you've got a lot of people there saying they're advanced adepts, doing these ceremonies, but not doing the magic, really, the deep magic underneath them.
Mm. Well, why do you think that is?
Well, I think that is because it was never shown. Israel Rigardi was never taught this information. Israel Rigardi released the information very shortly after he received his Adeptus Minor initiation, where he received a lot of it. And the information he got was already cut down from the order he was in, the Bristol Temple of the Stella Matutina. Mm-hmm. He already had edited versions, and he had no teaching on the inner workings. So he had nothing to release. So that came out 1937, to the end of the Second War, and people jumped on that. It was the first release of a comprehensive magical system. And, you know, for all its criticisms, for all its faults, the Golden Dawn is a comprehensive magical system. And here we have a release of some of it. People have jumped on that, and not really knowing there was a lot that was needed behind it. So that's one of the reasons. The second reason is that the Golden Dawn, probably more so than other traditions, does attract its, well, more than its fair share of people who are in it, I'll be honest, probably in it, probably trying to get stuff from it for themselves, rather than seeing what they can give to the tradition and give to the tradition's purpose. And I, as I state in the book, I honestly believe the purpose of the Golden Dawn tradition is the same as any authentic spiritual tradition, and that's partnership with the divine, whether we call that goddess, God, the one being, the one thing, partnership with the divine to change ourselves so we can be of better service to the world. So it's that motivation has been lost. A lot of people have approached the Golden Dawn from a very self-centered point of view. And you can't maintain that centered point, that self-centered point of view and be doing the magic. The two are totally opposite. The magic changes us into being in relationship with the divine, not just thinking of ourselves. So you can't have that motivation and the magic. So, you know, people have chosen one way or the other, and the Golden Dawn attracts a lot of these type of people. You just got to look on the internet, to be honest.
Yeah, and we'll get into that a little bit later, I think. Mm. Now, with regard to your book, you've gone into extensive detail with regard to these personal ceremonies, meditations, visualizations, for example, like the Kabbalistic cross or the lesser vanishing ritual, the pentagram or the hexagram. As I read through your book, you give a lot of insight and information, but at the same time, I'm wondering if there are intentional blinds that you've included here, or if this is simply how you were taught. And the only reason I phrase it this way is because I have some very limited experience in a Golden Dawn lineage, if you will, and there's things missing here that I've been taught that were very explicit, but also that I would be under oath not to reveal. And I'm wondering if you've intentionally left them out or if I'm maybe misreading.
That's a very interesting question. I would love to know the stuff that you know. What's in the book is written without blinds. There's no blinds. There's nothing missing. These rituals and the inner workings work effectively as I've written them in the book. I've seen them work with myself and many other people. That said, it's the best way of expressing what I'm going to say now is that there's different levels of the same text and of the same ritual.
Right.
So you could have a ritual, let's say the supreme ritual of the pentagram, and that can be approached one way, and then it can be approached at a, let's use the word, deeper way, with a different or slightly modified set of inner workings.
Right.
Now, it's the same text, it's the same ritual. The inner workings work well on the first way of approaching. The other way, they work in a different way. We can say deeper after you've mastered the first set. That's the way I was taught. It's like, it's almost different levels of reading scripture. If you know Lectio Divina, there's different ways of approaching scripture. And in the Golden Dawn, it's really clear also there's different ways of approaching the texts. There's literal, apparent, and spiritual significance of the texts. So the ceremonies and the rituals I've put in the book are being approached one way, and they're complete in themselves. Mm-hmm. If you were in a magical order with me, and I've been blessed to be in a couple of the years, and the way I was taught, there's other ways of approaching the same material.
Right. Okay, and I don't mean to suggest that anything you've published here is incorrect or ineffective. Mm. I very much know that it is effective and that it is correct. It's just perhaps I was privy to some things that, like you said, were analysis on a different, from a different angle or another level, or like you mentioned earlier, that this material is so deep and multi-layered that you could probably continually draw forth new insights from it. Yes. As you practice.
Yes, that's the way I see it. And that's the way – that's the hallmark to me of a effective ceremony or an effective teaching. Again, going back to scripture with exegesis, if we approach something that's authentic, that's sourced in the divine or in the higher realms – such as I believe the Golden Dawn rituals are, then it will give you what you need at the time for your level of understanding. 10 years later, it can give you a different need at a different level of understanding, but it's the same ritual.
Right.
And that's one of the beautiful things about the Golden Dawn.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that is a beautiful thing. And I think other traditions offer a similar type of progressive revelation, if you will. The more you see it, the more you participate in it, the greater your understanding evolves. And like you said, it gives you more insight when you're ready for it. I think anyone who's experienced that knows exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, I think you're right. And other traditions do it if they're sourced in the divine. It's one of the hallmarks, as I said, of what I believe in authentic tradition. So different groups in my experience, I've seen different groups work the same ceremony and then work the same ceremony 10 years later. And it's like a different ceremony, but the same. Mm-hmm. So it changes as we change.
Right.
You know, so... in your experience, you could be working with a ceremony in an order or a group that's got a Golden Dawn lineage where people have had this extra experience that's not in the Rigade compilations at somewhere. It could be what they've done, what their teacher's done, what their teacher's teacher's done, and somewhere it's carried on in the tradition that you find yourself in. And that's what makes the different orders and the different groups are all different. And what makes the, you know, plurality of the tradition is so good, it allows that to happen. But I think there's what happens with some people go, well, I've got this. These people are talking something different. And they think they're talking, you know, the wrong thing, where I see it as a multiplicity and a strength across the whole tradition.
One thing that stood out to me about your book, well, there were many, but one of them that really got me was this approach to initiation, and particularly this idea of self-initiation. I know I've spoken to people who say flat out that any kind of self-initiation is some delusion. And then I've spoken to other people who have said the only true initiator is the divine or the universe, and that therefore it may not be a quote-unquote self-initiation, but it is just as valid as any ceremony that you might go through with the authentic lineage. Mm. If somebody has your book and they're working these ceremonies, do you believe that that somehow attunes them, or I hesitate to even use the word initiate, because there are some clear things about that itself, but what are your thoughts about self-initiation and whether one can really be attuned to the Golden Dawn tradition without being a member of an order?
Two very, very good questions. So the first one on self-initiation, looking at that in terms of the transformation that an initiation gives you. Okay, so an initiation in a traditional lodge, I do not believe can be replicated by a single self-initiation ceremony. There's a number of reasons for this. One of the ones is that if you could do all the magical working required, let's say for the Golden Dawn Neophyte initiation, if you could do all the magical working yourself, you wouldn't need initiating. The Golden Dawn Neophyte initiation, this is the very first initiation, is incredibly richly layered and complex. It works with a minimum of 22 God forms. These are God presences around the initiate. So for someone to be able to do that themselves in a single ceremony is virtually impossible if they've come from nowhere. And if they've not come from nowhere, if they've got previous experience, then they're already in one sense magically adept. But the biggest problem I have with that concept of let's do a self-initiation ceremony, a one-off ceremony, is that the way the Golden Dawn and the way all, every single one I've seen, traditional lodge ceremonies in the West, I've written, it requires some level of passivity on the behalf of the person being initiated. We make them passive by binding them, putting them under a hood or a blindfold so they can't see. We do various things, and they're passive and are acted upon by the initiating team and the inner powers that the initiating team are working in relationship with. And it's that passivity that allows it to really go into them. Now, if you have got, let's say you've got the skill to have 22 God forms generated from yourself, if you've got that skill and you're going back and forth between these 22 God forms, you are not being passive. Your aura, your sphere of sensation in Golden Dawn terms, is not passive. And therefore, the energies and the blessings are not going to be absorbed in the same way. So the passivity is extremely important, I feel. And, you know, you can't replicate that in a ceremony where you're doing the work. So I don't think self-initiation is possible in a single ceremony. The approach I outline in the book is to look at what transformation the ceremony is trying to achieve and to design a curriculum that single solo work over time will achieve the same effects. And that could take months or years. Because the other thing to remember is that a initiation is a gift to the person being initiated. It's a gift from the lodge. It's hundreds of hours of practice, of work, of meditation of all the people. It's a gift of all the inner powers. And it's just plonked in 90 minutes right into the initiator. So if we want to replicate that, we have to do it slowly over time to replicate the effects. Now, whether we call that an initiation or not, to me, that's in one sense irrelevant, because the idea is to get the transformation from my point of view. So that answers the first part, I hope, of your question.
Yes, definitely.
Good. In terms of connecting with the Golden Dawn egregore, the Golden Dawn living tradition, there's a commonly held belief and view now that the Golden Dawn was, you know, birthed in the late Victorian era, was secret, became less secret, and continued on. Rigardi wrote the book in 1937. And then as the last Golden Dawn orders died out, the traditional ones that were formed from a time before the release of the book, they died out in the late 1970s. And then as they died out, and the last one we can probably point to is the Whare Rā temple in New Zealand, closed in 1978, I think. And then suddenly we find in 1979, around that time, we have Rigardi instituting Israel Rigardi in California, a resurgence of the Golden Dawn and a reconsecration of the ceremonial vault. And so what the view is now is that the egregore, the current, was held, and then as the physical orders died out, this current then became available for people who've got the same symbols. You know, they're working with the book, they're using the same ceremonies to then be able to tune into. That's the standard belief. And corollary of that is if we look at the Masonic tradition, you've got a Masonic tradition, you know, even with the Blue Lodge tradition, the basic 1, 2, 3 initiations. This is still held, is still practiced physically, and has never been let go of by the physical lodges. So even if you've got these initiations, and you can get them online, you can get the full Masonic initiations very easily. Even if you've got them and you worked a Masonic lodge without being authorized, without being told, yes, you can now work one, you've never been initiated, you just say, well, I've got these online, get a group of friends together, you work a Masonic lodge, you won't be able to tune into the egregore because it's never been let go of by the physical order in like the Golden Dawn let go of it. Okay. That's the standard underlying belief that a lot of people are working with these days. Now, you know, I think that's probably very true. It's really hard to actually know without somehow sitting down with every Golden Dawn person in the world and working out how they've connected to the tradition, how deep their connection is. I mean, how do you work that out? But I think you will find, as in my case, as in lots of people's case, there is a connection on a personal level at some point anyway. So even people, let's say, in Arkansas, you know, just got a book out from the library, purchased from Amazon, don't know any Golden Dawn people, working the Golden Dawn tradition from a book. I think at some point that will move them to have some connection with an elder of some form, a physical elder, and some transmission will probably occur. It may not be a formal initiation, but there'll be some transmission. Again, a corollary with the Christian tradition, a wonderful Franciscan writer, Richard Rohr, he talks about people become Christians when they meet someone who is a genuine Christian, who talks about their Christianity, and it inspires something in them. And I think it's a similar sort of thing. I think if we look at it, I don't think there'll be many people who've just got the book and has never been inspired by a physical person, which helped the transmission of somehow. It may not be a formal initiation. Without mentioning names and all the rest, I've met people in various traditions who've been initiated into these traditions, but they don't live the tradition. They don't hold it. They may have even a charter for the tradition. They may be an authorized representative, but the currents are not with them, because they're not working it, because they're not engaged with it.
They don't embody it. That's an excellent point.
Yeah, they don't embody it. And you may have someone who's got it from somewhere, may not have the official stamp, but they're embodying tradition. Now, my hunch is that there has to be some connection with someone physical, because this is one of my points, and it's implicit, it's not explicit in the book, is that the Golden Dawn, like all magical traditions, are not divorced from the physical. You know, we talk about astral planes, and you can do these ceremonies anywhere. You don't have to tune into the land and those sort of concepts. But my feeling is that physicality is a central point of spirituality. And my hunch is that somewhere along the line, someone's going to have met someone. There's going to be some transmission from a physical human being. Just a hunch.
Well, I've often thought about this. I think that is correct. I've come to a similar conclusion, and I've been blessed in my own life to have those people around me to provide that transmission. So I think I know what you mean by that.
It doesn't have to be a formal initiation. It's like I went to a workshop with Philip Cargom. He's the chosen chief of the Order of the Bards, Obeids, and Druids. Mm-hmm. And I mean, his story is amazing in itself. But he was there. He, at the end of the workshop, which was mainly lecturing, there was no magic. He just told us a story about Guillaume Barque and the transformation from Guillaume Barque into Taliesin. Mm-hmm. And that was a transmission. That evening, I had an experience, and it was nothing profound, but something went from that story into me. I was connected then to the story. I knew the story. I'd read the story. I'd heard it from other people. But he embodied it in such a way that just hearing it from him, I now had the lineage, in one sense, of that story. And that's how these things work, more often than not, I think.
Yeah. It seems to be. I can recall similar incidents in my own life that gave me that very same feeling. Now, I'd like to delve into some of the specifics in the book here, and the one I'd really like to talk about with you is the invocation of the Watchtower.
Ah, yes.
Because this is really fascinating to me on several different levels. You have Enochian, which is a far more recent tradition than the Kabbalah, and yet the Golden Dawn was where all of this came together. And I find it quite fascinating. And you go into pretty extensive detail about the inner work of this Watchtower ceremony. I'm really curious about your thoughts about the Watchtower ceremony, how Enochian and Kabbalah and hermetics and ceremonial magic all fit together, because when I go back to the source documents, I find it really remarkable that, and I don't want to say Mathers did it or, you know, the chiefs of the original Hermetic Order, the Golden Dawn did it, but somebody mashed these things up together, and it seems really remarkable to me that it fits somehow. And I'm just curious your thoughts about this.
Yeah, it's a great question, Greg. Great question. Yeah, the Watchtower ceremony, as far as we can tell, was part of a series of communications from the inner planes that Mathers received about the Adeptus Minor work and the Adeptus Minor initiation. The Watchtower itself is taken from, as you probably know, the opening of the Adeptus Minor grade and then adapted by Israel Regarde. So the Watchtower was lifted from that grade. Now that grade, the Adeptus Minor grade, one of its key mysteries is the, let's use the word synthesis, mm-hmm. is the synthesis of a number of traditions and looking at not a combination of A plus B plus C equals D. It's not like that. It's a synthesis of A plus B plus C to get to what is behind all of them. And we see that clearly in the Adeptus Minor grade, in the what's now known as the analysis of the keyword, which starts off with the letters above the crucified Christ in Latin, the Christian mystery, then goes straight into the Hebrew, Yod, Nun, Resh, Yod, goes straight into a Hebrew tradition, and then uses Egyptian god forms, and then uses a traditional Gnostic word. So you've got the same thing happening as what's happening in the Watchtower ceremony. You've got a number of different, what was once called separate traditions, and the Golden Dawn isn't combining them. It's analyzing them, which is why it's called analysis of the keyword. It's analyzing in a different sense of not just intellectual analysis. It's analyzing as to get to the source, which is the divine behind all, to allow the practitioner to go straight to the heart of that source. Now, this philosophy that all traditions come from a central source, you know, was alive in Victorian England in Universalism from probably the Theosophical Society 1875 onwards. One of the unique things about the Golden Dawn is was one of the first groups that actually enacted it in spiritual and magical practice. And the Watchtower, as you say, is a prime example of that. So, you know, purists will say, oh, purists of the Enochian, purists of Kabbalah, will say they don't really fit. The point is they're not supposed to fit 100% as in language equivalents. No in English, non in French, and nine in German. It's not supposed to fit like that. It's supposed to be analyzed, brought together to enable a return to the source where all these traditions come from. And I think, as you say, the Watchtower is just, it works so well because it does that. And I've known people just do the Watchtower without any inner workings at all. Not a clue, you know, and they love it. There's something so mysterious. It affects them. You know, they get transported into that state of touching the source. It's an amazing ritual.
It really is. You made some really excellent points in your answer there, and I tend to agree with what you say. And I know that Enochian, in and of itself, has this capacity to be quite powerful, even for very inexperienced practitioners. However, I've done some research that recently a book came out, and I don't know if you're familiar with this. And it's certainly not a criticism at all of anything you've done. It's just an interesting point to me because we're talking about these tablets and these grids with English letters on them. And I believe the book is called Arguing with Angels.
A wonderful book.
Yeah, I was really taken in by some of the analysis. And one of the things that really struck me was that the tablets used in the Golden Dawn ritual were, I don't know if he was able to conclusively prove this or if it was simply his conclusion based on his research, but that the Golden Dawn used as its source the Casaubon True and Faithful Relation book.
Yes.
And that had actually the wrong combinations of letters, and yet yes, it still seems so effective to me, and that's just strikes me as quite remarkable.
Yeah, I think it's used the word wrong. I think wrong from a purist point of view, definitely. And it is remarkable if we have the mindset that things need to be right. Now, I think if we look at it, the approach that the angelic language in itself is a gift from the angels, let's put it that way. So if things aren't exactly right, if they're a different way, they've been slightly altered, I still believe you can get to the original source through that. Mm-hmm. Because it's a divine gift. Now, that's not saying we can do anything with it. Of course, there's sensible parameters. But when it's put together in such a way that is inspired. So if me and you on a Saturday morning, you know, having a cup of tea, were to try and create something, we probably wouldn't get the same quality, for want of a better word, than Mathers did when he was inspired by this inner communication, whatever name you want to put to the inner communication. So it came beyond him. He was using flawed material, but it came beyond him, and that used and bypassed that flaw because it was beyond him and still sourced in the same level of where the angels were sourced. And that's why I think, as you say, it's remarkable. You've got stuff that's not exactly correct or wrong, but it still can work. And I think that does the same way. It's like Neil Douglas Klotz. I don't know if you know his work. He's a Sufi and a mystic and a translator of some of the original Christian texts, and he works with body prayers. And he translates from the original Aramaic that Jesus would have spoken in the Peshitta, which is a Aramaic text of the New Testament. And the wording, if we look at this rich wording, it's very different to the English wording. But he said what he's found over the years is that people who are meditating on this very poor, like strained out English wording of some scripture text, if they meditate deeply, they will come up with the same realizations that was in the original Aramaic text. Mm. Because it's a gift. It's there. If people are open to a divine source, I think we can get there anyway. You know? So, yeah, it's a very interesting point you raise. And that's the only way I can make sense of it, is that we're lucky. We're lucky we had the angels on our side.
You make excellent points there. And your explanation seems to make sense to me. And I appreciate it because, quite frankly, I think we need an explanation. I have mixed feelings about even saying that. When I read the evidence that says, well, they transpose some of the squares and they're out of order, and then I say, well, but it still seems effective, then I feel like, yes, I would really like to know why, because obviously it's not dependent on having the grid laid out the same way that the angels supposedly gave it to Dee and Kelly. So yeah. I appreciate your answer very much.
And I think what I would counsel on there, I'm not saying I'm 100% right, is just a you know, I guess, word of warning, is that we can't just sit down from our intellects and go, oh yes, A, B, and C, and create things. I feel the tradition, whether it's the angelic tradition, for want of a better word, or the tradition that we know as Enochian, or the Golden Dawn, whatever, I think the tradition looks after itself. And if we are open to that, then we can be inspired, and we can then create things, new things that work. But I feel particularly with Enochian, what I've seen over the years, well, maybe it's just Australia, a lot of young intellectual men get involved in it, and they argue about the movement of the squares, and it's a very dry thing. Mm-hmm. Where, to me, I mean, it's an incredible revelation. You've got Dee and Kelly, angels talking to them, you know? Mm-hmm. And then this language, a whole language given to us, it's mysterious. It's beyond intellectual understanding.
Again, I agree with what you say there. Very much, and especially about the dryness of arguing about minutiae of this. It's nice to step back and appreciate what it really is, and I also could not agree with you more about the tradition looking after itself and seemingly perpetuating itself when human beings fail it at times.
Yes, I would agree with that entirely. Yeah, nice way of putting it.
Now, I'm being watchful of our time here. It really seems like it has flown by. What I'd like to do right now before we take a quick break is to, we haven't really delved into the specifics of your book. I want to reiterate that it's really brilliant material here. And I just want to give you a few minutes if you had any thoughts or anything you wanted to say to people listening about the book or about your work, because before we wrap up, I just want to give you that chance to say whatever you'd like.
Oh, good. Thank you, Greg. Well, I think the book stands for itself. I mean, the idea of the book came about many years ago when I picked up the original Golden Dawn material, found there was just the words, then got a special order in of Ceremonial Magic by Israel Rigade, which is supposed to be really good, and found it was just the words repeated four times to bump it out into a book-length material. And I thought, this is bad. This is crap. And I thought, if I ever get a chance, I'm going to write a book that will show how it works on the inner levels, how it actually works. And eventually I got the opportunity. I was taught, I was deepened in the tradition, and that thought kept coming back until I had to write the book. Basically, I was impelled inwardly from that commitment as a teenager originally, and that's the source of the book. I'm not saying that the inner workings, the explanations of each of the ceremonies, is the truth. It's one truth. It works. Other people have different ways of doing things, but what I want to encourage, there's signs that it is encouraging, it is happening. What I want to encourage is that we won't ever get a book like Ceremonial Magic by Israel Rigade again, where we just have do this, do that, and no explanations of the inner workings that make the ceremony transformational. So I want to encourage people to think about the inner work. I want people to practice the inner work. You know, they pick up my book, they say, yeah, okay, I'll give this a go. Oh, that didn't quite work for me. It doesn't quite work in my tradition. But I can see there's something I do need to do to make this ritual work. Let's work out what that is. That's just as important as someone sitting down following my book letter by letter. I just want to encourage the Golden Dawn to have its potential reached in the broadest, you know, Western esoteric tradition.
Well, thank you very much. So what I'd like to do now is switch gears a little bit, and I have some questions regarding the Golden Dawn tradition and things that are going on today.
Right.
In the Occult of Personality membership section, Peregrine Wildoak, author of By Names and Images, Bringing the Golden Dawn to Life, discusses the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, the recent public feuds, and the timeless wisdom and beauty that the Golden Dawn has provided to so many through the years. Please join us for that thought-provoking conversation.